about Kellen Mond in this offense. How optimistic are you as far as under Jimbo Fisher?
Oh, I'm quite optimistic. A lot of it has to do with the comments that Fisher made when we were in Hoover last week. He seems to really think that Mond has grasped the complexities of that offense, that it is highly complex. He took a big step last year, and it looks like Fisher's anticipating that he'll take another big one this year. And if that's the case, he's got a lot of weapons. All those receivers return. They've got a talented young wide receiver. The running backs will be fine. He has the potential to put up some big numbers.
As far as, you know, I'm assuming you took time out to make the predictions as far as the West and the East. How high did you put Texas A&M?
Second. I put them second in the West.
Really?
And yeah, I don't think that that's too outrageous a thing to say. I think that they're the second most talented team. LSU is right there, and I had to pick between the two, but I think that it may very well come down to those two teams playing in Baton Rouge at the end of November to decide who does take that spot, just like it did this year. So I'm optimistic. Obviously, you know, my glasses are tinted a little bit maroon, but, you know, listening to what Fisher had to say last week, you know, kind of swayed me just a titch. And if he's as optimistic as he sounds, and last year he wasn't at all. He was very basic and didn't really get into specifics and, you know, hedged his bets. This year he pretty much put his cards on the table. So if he's willing to do that, I guess I'm going to be willing to listen to him.
Here's the thing. Four starters back on defense. Is there enough leadership on the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, I think that there is. And I think a lot of it has to do with the best player on that defense, Justin Matabike. He's a third-year junior, or fourth-year junior. One of the best defensive linemen in the SEC. I was disappointed that he was only second team in the preseason voting. I think that he's one of the best. He should have been first team. And I think that he's going to basically set the tone. And then you have some other guys that are not necessarily returning starters, but have an awful lot of experience playing, not only just for Mike Elko, but in general. Michael Clemens is a guy who did not play last year. He would have been the starting defensive end had he not gotten injured. He's back. You've got Bobby Brown, who played a lot last year as a freshman. Jaden Peavy's played significant minutes each of his first 2 years. Tyree Johnson got in there a lot late last season. So they have more depth and athleticism up front. I think they've also got some speed rushers, which they lacked last year. You know, I think that they actually believe that this can be one of the better defensive fronts in the SEC.
How well equipped is Texas A&M? You know, week two, they have to go to Clemson, and that's right in the middle of starting against Texas State, which should be a win, and then hosting Lamar on September 14th. But on September 7th, they have to go to Clemson. What happens to this team mentally, besides losing to Clemson per se? All of a sudden, they get off to 0-1 start. Say if Auburn goes into College Station and, you know, shocks the Aggies.
Oh, that would be tremendously disappointing. But Auburn beat them last year, too. They choked away that game where they had a 10-point lead on November the 3rd, and they ended up winning their last three games and then the bowl game. So each week is its own different animal, and that's one of the things that they'll just have to learn is if something goes wrong, you've got to drop it and move on. They've got a lot of talent. If they stay healthy, they'll be highly competitive. They have to keep, you know, their minds on a week-to-week basis. Obviously, Clemson's going to be tough, and that's a rough way to start, you know, your season per se. Obviously, Texas State week one, but A&M was not as talented last year as they were this year, and that game ended up 28-26, and had there not been a bad call, they could have been the team that beat the defending or the eventual national champion.
Mark Passwaters, publisher with Aggie Yell, joining us again. All right, so what record, you know, besides being bowl eligible, what record is that record that nobody's going to be happy, it's just not acceptable, we're not paying Jimbo Fisher to be blank? What is that record that would really set off the fan base?
7-5.
All right, because, see, that's what I have, but the reason I bring it up, because, and nothing against Texas A&M, I just think the way the schedule plays out, I have a few surprises there. I think the fact that Georgia's on that, you know, you got Georgia on the list. You got back-to-back games, your A&M, at Georgia, at LSU to wrap up the season. I actually have Texas A&M finishing fourth in the West with a 7-5 mark.
I don't. point blank. I think that they'll go into Athens, a two-loss team, being the losses being to Clemson and Alabama. And I think that they can certainly compete with LSU should they be healthy. I think a lot of people are underestimating how much talent this team actually has because they didn't see it last year. A guy like Kendrick Rogers had two good games, but he was injured most of the season. Jamon Osmond was hurt most of the year. Nobody knows who Baylor Cup and Jayshon Corbin are. They didn't have Anthony Hines last year at linebacker. They didn't have Clemens last year. So they look at these guys like, oh, well, they didn't play last year, so they're completely inexperienced and their talent may not be what last year's was. Well, that's not necessarily true. The biggest issue for them is going to be, do they have overall depth, and what's it going to be in the secondary? And they've done a good job there bringing in some talent, and they've got some guys back that didn't play last year due to injury. So I think that a lot of people who don't follow the program closely tend to think, well, there has to be a drop-off because you lost so much senior talent. That's not necessarily the case because for the first time in a long time, they actually have depth to replace those guys.
But here's the thing. How much of a difference is it between Corbin that you brought up and, say, Travion Williams carrying the ball for that offense?
Honestly, it may not be that much. I don't think that he's going to average 6 yards a carry, but I think that he can take a lot more of those 30-yard runs. He may be 3-3-30 as opposed to Travion being 5-5-15-20. Do I think he's going to have 1,760 yards rushing? No, probably not. But they've got more guys that can carry the load should they need it. And Corbin proved last year that he's a very talented young back. So Fisher has a lot of faith in him. He's going to be the number one guy, and I think that he'll be a good fit for this.
In the West, if it's not Alabama, who do you have winning the West?
A&M.
Okay, that's fair. And in the East, if it's not, say, Georgia, Florida, who is that next team that certainly could be pushing them?
Whew. Now, there you've got a big drop-off because those are the two teams that I think really rule that roost. Georgia's an outstanding club. I can't imagine that they would not win that division unless Florida really, really gets hot and Felipe Franks is better than I anticipate that he'll be. Kentucky lost so much it's difficult to just push them in there. Maybe Missouri? Maybe Kentucky after all? I mean, it's really hard to say. I think that Georgia and Florida are so far removed from the rest of them that it's difficult to fathom that one or the other wouldn't win that division.
But here's the problem with both Florida and Georgia. Besides the teams they have to play in the East, Florida has, in back-to-back weeks, Florida plays host to Auburn, then they travel to LSU. Are they going to win both of those games? I don't think so. You look at Georgia, back-to-back weeks, they get Auburn on the road, and then they play host to Texas A&M. And this is during a stretch where, for Georgia, they start the month of November with Florida in Jacksonville, then Missouri at home, on the road against Auburn, back home against A&M before wrapping up the year against Georgia Tech. But right there in the thick of it for Georgia, Auburn, Texas A&M back-to-back, do they win both of those two? I don't think so. And that's where the East can be won by somebody else with the fact that you look at the strong schedule for both Florida and Georgia, knowing who they play as far as the teams from the West.
Well, in that case, you got to look at Missouri because the teams that they play from the West aren't that caliber. They get Ole
Right.
Miss and Arkansas.
Right.
And I think that certainly would work in their favor. I don't know where they play. I believe that they play at Athens this year, but I'm not totally sure of that. I'm pretty sure.
You're talking about Missouri?
Missouri
is at in Athens against Georgia.
Yeah, and maybe Tennessee can do something. But, it's going to be really interesting because, like you said, the schedule makers did no friends to the power teams. A&M plays Alabama after Alabama has a bye week. They end with Georgia and LSU. LSU gets Alabama in the middle of their death march. It's very, very tough this year to sit there and say, okay, these really good teams have a really easy schedule, because nobody does. South Carolina and A&M seem to have that little extra curse of a very powerful non-conference foe, and it's the same guy, the same team, Clemson. But you know, nobody's really getting any favors done to them this year, and that's one of the joys of the SEC. There is no off week.
Yeah, and I came up, you know, last year 11 teams went bowling from the SEC. I have 12 teams with the minimum number of 6 wins this year as far as the regular season from the SEC. The only two teams that I do not have as far as, you know, the two teams I have with non-losing records, I have Ole Miss going 5-7, and I have Arkansas going 4-8. Everybody else, 6-6 or better.
I think that's very feasible. I mean, and shoot, Ole Miss could be better, but they've got a lot of talent that they need to add on defense, and switching schemes to a 3-4, you know, that changing gears in mid-flight is difficult, and that's what it is right now. They're trying to win with last year's the players from last year's scheme, which may not fit this year, and that wasn't a good defense to begin with. So they may have trouble there, and like you said, Arkansas is just, you know, they're a team in the midst of a serious rebuild. Their offensive line doesn't look good this year, and they lost a lot of from that defense, and the defense wasn't very good last year anyway.
You know, we always get upsets, and we saw it last year as well. I think they're going to be magnified this year for 2019, especially with the teams in the SEC. When you got this many, good teams or better, dials up some nice upsets throughout the year. And this is, if you're a college football fan, you're going to absolutely love it.
It's going to be fun. It always is. And I think that the SEC will again be the class of college football. But the thing that differentiates the SEC from everybody else is the fact that there are so many very good teams that you can sit there and say, oh, well, shoot, if they win the division, then they can win the conference. And if they win the conference, then they can win the whole thing. And it's not just Alabama anymore. It's Georgia. Florida's there. A&M is on the way up. LSU can't be discounted at all. They're a very good team. You know, so there's 5 teams out of 14 that could sit there and feasibly say, we're going to be in the playoff if things go right for us. And I don't think any other conference in America can say that.